Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members. Stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 10 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 20 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 30 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store, download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship level, fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to Wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
If you have a badass bank card, do you have a pink one or the black one? I've got to say, both colors look and feel like a badge of honor. It's one of those little things that actually reflects how you've moved through life. Confident, intentional, and not afraid to do things differently. And that's really what Badass Bank is about. It was created to deliver true customer service, and honestly, you feel that. It's not just talk. They show up, they support you, and they make managing money feel a lot more human. What I love most is who they're for. Badass Bank is for the everyday badass, the people pushing through hard things, showing up for their families, rewriting their stories. Built by industry disruptors and backed by decades of banking experience, they're here to challenge the status quo and give you real control over your financial future. Badass Bank is looking for customers who expect more. So the question is, are you badass material? Consider this your invitation. Find your inner badass and visit badass.bank.
Member FDIC.
All right, here we go on a Monday. It is opening day. We are live out at Kauffman Stadium, just outside of Gate D, as the Royals get set to take on the Twins in a couple of hours. We've got all kinds of people stopping by today to get us set for opening day, and maybe the nicest opening day, certainly since you and I have been doing this show. Actually, definitively, it's the nicest opening day since you and I.
Yeah, it's supposed to be in the 80s.
It's going to be 85 degrees. Bear with us on the wind. We'll do our best throughout the broadcast today to try to stop that as much as we possibly can. But I'm fired up. We already went inside the stadium a little bit, kind of get that first look. It's always one of my favorite things to do before we start the season and do our show outside Gate D, and that is going there. And, like, I don't care what we all think about the future of stadium sites and things like that. Kauffman Stadium on an opening day, when it's sunny out, it's gorgeous.
Yeah, grass looks perfect. It, like, there was a barely, like, a couple of wispy white clouds in the sky. Other than that, it was bright and blue, and we're standing out there. Yeah, it gives me a, it's like an annual tradition. Yeah, sure. I probably have 78 photos in my phone of the field from random opening days over the course of my life, but when baseball is officially back and in your backyard, as in, that just makes it feel more real than even the few road games to start the season.
Oh, now today feels like opening day. That's what we were saying.
It feels like baseball.
We were saying last week it was a bummer that they had to open up, you know, on a Friday night. But here we go. It's a true Monday opening day at Kauffman Stadium. We've got multiple people stopping by this hour. In fact, here in about 10 minutes, we're going to have Jake Eisenberg, who you guys hear, of course, on 96.5 The Fan. You heard him throughout the weekend. You'll hear him again today. He's going to stop by. We'll get his thoughts on what happened in Atlanta to open up the season, his thoughts on opening day. Plus, in about a half hour, we will have the general manager and the president of baseball operations, J.J. Piccolo, joining us here live outside Gate D. A lot to get into with him already, not just with the typical opening day stuff, but based off of what occurred with Carlos Estevez and seeing the lineup on Friday that had everybody talking. So he'll join us, and then at around 11:20 today, we'll head inside and hear from John Sherman. He will address the media just about opening day, and I'm sure he'll be asked about the stadium future, which, of course, they don't have an announcement yet, but we'll find out the latest there. We also will hear from Matt Quatrero, and then later on today around 12:30, our guy, our Royals insider, Josh Vermeer, will stop by as he's already revved up and rolling for the start of the season. You guys heard him throughout the weekend with his on-deck and post-game show. Even though we're on remote, we got the text line pulled up. You guys can interact with us if you would like over on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. So, opening series. It's one series, but it feels like...
Felt a lot like last year.
Let's start with the biggest part. We can get to, I thought, a few positives. But the biggest part was something that we had discussed for weeks and weeks and weeks, and we had asked even J.J. Piccolo just last Tuesday about. And that was, hey, Carlos Estevez, that velocity It's not there. We can all see it. There's no hiding behind it. Where are you guys at? And at the time, they kind of just said, well, you know, we're kind of just going to play it out. I mean, last year he had an issue. It's a slow ramp up. Well, they tried it for one game, and it was an absolute disaster. And it's why this team should be 2-1 right now, Cody. Instead, they're sitting at 1-2.
And that's what's frustrating is that it felt like last year in the sense that what do they get all series long? Excellent starting pitching. What were they incapable of doing, Gold, in order to make that better? Oh, I don't know. Get some of offense going again. So, like, it was excellent starting pitching. Okay, we're good. Now what do we do? Can't hit. And then you get the enough runs to maybe get the win through. And it's like, well, you can't win scoring two runs most of the time, but maybe this one. And Carlos Estevez doesn't have a bad outing. Has, like, the worst. Like, you know how hard it is to give up? You know how hard it is to give up 6 runs in the bottom of the ninth when the team's up 2-0? It's tough. And so, like, it was just a weird start to the season. But there were positives, as you mentioned, coming out of there. But I think that was the biggest story out of spring training.
It was.
It became the biggest story in game one.
Yeah, that's we all knew it. It was no, I mean, anybody that paid attention, it was no surprise that that was going to be one of the bigger questions heading in. And unfortunately, you know, it went the worst case scenario of it. And so now maybe he takes a little bit of a step back. We'll see. He also got hit, as you mentioned, with the line drive.
Yeah, had him in a boot,
you know, and we'll see how this plays out. We'll ask J.J. Piccolo about it moving forward. We'll also ask a guy that is getting ready to sit down with us as well, Jake Eisenberg, about that, because this is something that he saw, we all saw in spring training, or World Baseball Classic, I guess, in Carlos's case as well. I did think the one positive, though, among a couple, Seth Lugo, that was also a guy that people were questioning. The way he looked post-trade deadline last year, like, all right, was he dealing with something with his finger? You know, spring training, World Baseball Classic as well, and he looked like the Seth Lugo you're expecting to count on all year.
Yeah, movement, pitches, deception, all the kind of stuff that would normally make that a little bit different or change it a little bit, at least on the other end. And that at least gives you at least something to go in this idea of where was he going into the season. Yeah, he was the second biggest question probably after Estevez. And instead, but what you got at Lugo was okay.
Yeah,
sharp
you
Lugo
need that.
In a situation where you're like, well, you can't go 0-3 to start the season. Offense still cold to start that game. And so you're like, oh, okay. You know, because, again, right now it's the weirdest lineup in baseball, only in the sense that how many teams in baseball would have, like, their 4 and 5 hitters both be catchers? Like, that's not common. Most catchers can't hit. People are still covet, like, Martin Maldonado with the trade deadline. That's how much they want anybody who can swing a bat. And so it's a funky lineup anyway and kind of plays a different way. And so, like, the offense started slow, but the starting pitching, once again, appears to be, like, a strength. Even
Michael Wacha, you know, I feel like anytime we talk about pitching, once again, he was the last name we just mentioned in the first 3 minutes. He just kind of gets lost in the shuffle because he's just consistent.
Yeah.
He just, no nonsense, does his thing, and yet Michael Wacha is always there providing you a solid outing. That's been the story throughout his time in Kansas City. And so, you know, hey, let's not overreact. There's 162 games. Am I bummed that they should be 2-1 as we sit here today? Yeah. Now it was a National League opponent. All right, now you start some games in division and all that today with the Minnesota Twins in town, which is exciting. And we got Jake Eisenberg joining us, kind enough to stop by on a busy, busy day. He's all suited up. He's kind of got like the, what would we call it? Like, not powder blue. He's kind of got...
It's close to that color.
Yeah, like a little bit of a blue blazer on with the light blue shirt. You're ready for opening day.
Oh, it's all about the shades of blue. I've been ready for opening day since last season ended, and we got a little bit of a tease because everybody started a day before we did, and then we had opening day in Atlanta, which is opening day, sure, because it counts, but it's still not quite the same thing as having baseball back in Kansas City and baseball back at Kauffman Stadium. And just walking into the ballpark this morning, you could feel the buzz. You could already smell the barbecue.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, heck, last night when we got back from the airport and we came here, you could smell the barbecue last night,
yeah,
too. And we got a first look at the outfield fences. It's going to be a great season.
And honestly, it just, like, it feels right. There's some part about it that's it feels very cathartic for me to step inside the stadium for a minute and see the grass and be like, ah, this is nice.
Yeah.
This makes it it makes me feel like summer is close or whatever.
Well, especially
know.
With the weather today.
Oh,
this has to be or might be, this has to be one of the hotter opening days in Royals baseball history. I got to imagine. I know the season used to start a couple of weeks later, and now it's starting in late March almost every year, but still, it's going to be, what, 75 degrees today?
Oh, more than that.
More than that?
I think it's going to be 82 to 85.
82?
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah, amazing.
It's going to be. You mentioned the fences, though. What are you expecting? I mean, it is, you know, we're going to ask J.J. Piccolo. I mean, this is something that they have invested you know, hundreds if not thousands of hours in trying to research and analytics and what is this really going to mean for the club. But you don't really know until it actually happens. What are you expecting?
I don't want to throw cold water on the whole thing, but it's not as if Kauffman Stadium has all of a sudden become a bandbox. It's not as if you're going to see home runs flying out of the ballpark left and right. Now, that might not be the case today with the weather and the wind.
Yeah, lefties feel like it'd be a good advantage today.
Yeah, exactly. I'll tell you this. Coming to the ballpark last night and getting a first look at the fences, to me, the thing that was most noticeable was the height. You can definitely see that they are shorter, 8 feet from the power alleys to the corners, and you can see where the corners jut out, where they used to curve around, kind of like that hockey arena. Now it's more angular, and so you're not going to have that kind of hockey arena curl with that puck going down the line the same way that you used to. Center field looks exactly the same. It is. It's unchanged. As far as what it's actually going to do tangibly, yeah, you might see some more home runs, I think especially down the lines and obviously in the power alleys too. I don't think you'll see so many more that it's going to be like, whoa, what has happened here? And I do think over the course of the season it's going to even out to a degree. What the Royals have done is basically make Kauffman Stadium just a little bit more neutral, or at least closer to neutral, not so much of a pitcher's, at least from a power perspective, home run paradise for pitchers and a home run graveyard for hitters. It's just a little bit closer to neutral. So, you know, hopefully we see one of those balls today for the Royals that would have been an out last year that's a home run today, and over the course of the season, hopefully see a lot of those. I just don't know that it's going to be as dramatic of a difference as maybe we all feel it's going to be initially.
Do you have as high of expectations as I did going into the year for the offense? Like, it's not like a previous year. Like, some years you go in and it's all about, like, the possibilities. What could occur? I'm like, they got three guys who had 100 RBI in the roster last year. They have Michael Garcia coming off of a career year. Carter Jensen proved he could swing it at the end of last season, right? And, again, looks comfortable at the plate. And so it's like I just came into the season. Like, this isn't one of those hope years for the offense.
Yeah.
I should just have expectation for you for being good.
I think you're right. I think expectations can be dangerous. I think expectations can be important, too. And I think it's reasonable to have expectations for the Royals' offense this season. Yes, it was an offense that struggled mightily in the first half of last year. But if you look at the second half of last year, this is a Royals offense that second half averaged nearly 5 runs a game and hit just under 300 with runners in scoring position. That's over a longer period of time in the second half of the season with more or less the same personnel as they're bringing back now. And then you add in Lane Thomas and Isaac Collins. You hope for a bounce back from Jonathan India. You hope that Jack Caglione takes a step forward. You have a full season of Carter Jensen and a great September. And then, of course, you have that offensive core, your top four in the lineup. It's Michael Garcia, the catalyst. Bobby Witt Jr., the superstar. Vinny Pasquantino, he's the heartbeat. Salvador Perez is the captain. Those are the four guys that are going to lead the charge of this offense, but the supporting cast, I think, is stronger than it was for the entirety of last year, and so I think the expectations are reasonable.
We got Jake Eisenberg joining us here at Kauffman Stadium. We're outside Gate D till 2 o'clock, and then we hand things off to Vern for the on-deck show. And ultimately, of course, you'll hear Jake Eisenberg later on this afternoon as the Royals take on the Twins. Over the weekend, we were talking about this right as you were sitting down. I mean, the big story out of it for at least Royals fans, and certainly on Friday night, was Carlos Estevez. And you were there in spring training. You obviously watched the WBC. The Royals acknowledged it. The velocity was a problem all spring. They gave him an opportunity, though, to work through it. It obviously went terribly wrong for one night. How do you think they navigate this moving forward? And do you think Carlos will have an opportunity to close again this year?
Again this year? Absolutely. He's going to have an opportunity to close again this year. It was interesting listening to Matt Quatrero during our pregame conversation with him yesterday. He admitted, yeah, you need that velocity. You know, there's a big difference between 97, 98, and 91, 92.
Yeah, you can have all the stuff in the world. You still got to throw hard.
Exactly, especially at the back end of a bullpen when you need strikeouts to close games. And Q did admit that, in all likelihood, it sounds like that when Estevez is next into a game, until he has that full velocity back, until he's back to 100%, it's likely going to be lower leverage situations, which is probably the right thing to do.
Absolutely.
Given the way that spring went, given the way that he did not pitch very much during the World Baseball Classic. And I think what gave the Royals hope, and I think it was reasonable hope too, is that we saw this exact same thing last year. The only difference was last year we knew that Carlos Estevez was dealing with some low back tightness for the majority of spring training.
Yeah.
But he came out opening day and the velocity was not all the way there, but it was there enough that it was like, okay, he's ramped up and ready to go. I think the more concern this year is that there's not an obvious injury that we're aware of, and the Royals don't currently have any injury concerns other than the left ankle, and we'll see how that goes over the course of the next few days. But yes, Carlos Estevez will have a chance to close again this season. I don't think it's going to be in the short term, but it will happen at some point this season.
I did think more than anybody out of the entire team this year, I thought Jack Caglione was most in need of a good start. You know, sometimes like confidence and the way that it starts and the way his big league career started, it's like sometimes I feel like there's a couple of guys who could just use a good start and not have to think too hard about it. I know Vinny's talked a lot about his slow start from last season as well, but in the end, like, he stabilized and stayed stabilized the rest of the year. Do you think Jack Caglione needs to get off to a good start for the confidence purposes?
Sure. I mean, I think anybody wants to get off to a good start for confidence purposes. I think it would be great for Jack Caglione to have a good start. I think it would be great for Carter Jensen to have a good start. I think it would be great for Jonathan India to have a good start and get some confidence under his belt, too, trying to bounce back from what was a rough year for him. I think a good start is good for anybody. Is it better for certain players than others? That's hard for me to say. I think if you ask any single guy in that clubhouse, hey,
they'd
would you
like
rather have a good
well.
Start or a bad start? I wonder which they're going to choose, right?
Yeah, good start probably based on that.
Yeah.
I will say, I think we're talking later in the show, I think Caglione looks like he did in the WBC, a little more comfortable at the plate.
Patient,
like,
confident.
Walking more, doesn't seem like he's chased as much. It's only a handful of at-bats, but he does look more comfortable.
Look, one of the Royals' hitting mantras the last several seasons has been know thyself. Know who you are as a hitter. And I think Jack Caglione, when he came up last year, sure, he knew himself to a degree as a hitter, but he was so out-talenting and out-athleting everybody that was on the field in college and then early on in the minors, and he was punishing mistakes at every single level. There are fewer mistakes at the major league level, and that is, you know, a tough lesson to learn sometimes. But what we saw in spring training and during the World Baseball Classic was, I thought, really impressive plate discipline and patience. If you combine his stats between the WBC and the Cactus League, he had the same number of walks as he did strikeouts. 11 strikeouts, 11 walks.
That's a great sign.
That's really impressive.
That's a really genuinely a great sign.
The ABS, another element to this season.
Love it.
I was going to say, so you love,
love it.
I love seeing Salvi, what was it, three times in a row?
Yes, yeah, same spot.
Same
too.
Spot. He has the
He's
strike
four
zone
four.
Down completely. I mean, is this just going to be that right there? You should just get the gold glove for acknowledging that over and over.
I do think that it should be in somewhat, it should be part of the formula in some way
Why
to
not?
Decide
I'm
gold glove.
At it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you can't do that for hitters or maybe pitchers. I don't know, because they're defenders too. But, you know, if you're trying to figure out who the gold glove catcher should be, yeah, knowing the strike zone should certainly be part of it. Why, you know, it's kind of tangential to framing, isn't it? But, yeah, I think it's been a huge success. It was in spring training last year. I think through the first weekend, it's been fantastic.
I'm excited for fans that maybe haven't been to a minor league game and seen it over the last couple of years when they've been using it. But to see it in person today and realize how, one, how great it is, but also how quick. And they put, and there's a little bit of there's a slight bit of tension that comes with it, and then there's a roar of a crowd if you get the call overturned. We've seen that happen.
Oh, CB Buckner this weekend.
Yeah,
it happened
yeah.
two times.
And they went nuts. They went nuts in Cincinnati. So yeah, I love the drama of it. I love the anticipation of it. I love that we have an avenue to correct egregious misses. There are going to be some pitches that are borderline, you know, tenth of an inch here, tenth of an inch there. That's great. It's good to overturn those and maybe flip those. But what this is designed to do is address those egregious misses in high-leverage situations. Of course, you have to have a challenge in that high-leverage situation. We saw the Braves burn their both challenges in the first inning.
That was crazy.
Just the other day. That was nuts. And I think we'll see strategy for teams with it over the course of the season. But, yeah, I love that we now have an avenue to correct those egregious misses as long as you use your challenges strategically. I think it's a great, great thing that we have now.
There's always a couple one of those ones where it's just like right down the middle. You're like, why'd you call that a ball?
did you blink?
Yeah, exactly.
Did you completely blink
and
just whiff on it?
Yeah. I've always defended the umps, I guess, in this, that I don't think the human eye is genuinely trained to follow an 87-mile or, you know, 97-mile-per-hour slider moving 7 inches across the plate. Good luck.
Well, Cody, think about it. Hitting is harder than ever. Being a home plate umpire is harder than ever. You've got all of these breaking balls diving and dipping and ducking and dodging.
6,500 RPMs.
It's incredible. Yeah. Like, and umpires, let me be clear. Umpires are better than they have ever been before in the history of the game. Full stop. This is not because umpires are not good. They are better than ever. This is because humans are fallible, and there are certain situations in which having that safety net of the automated zone is going to be helpful in correcting the egregious mistakes.
We got Jake Eisenberg hanging out with us outside Gate D, a very windy Kauffman Stadium, although it's going to be a beautiful day to take in some baseball. What do we know about the Twins and the division as a whole? I mean, what should fans know? I mean, everybody's focusing on the Tigers. This Twins team, I think the opinion from the outside is that they're not expected to be all that competitive this year. What do they have, though?
Well, they still have Joe Ryan, which I think is a surprise to most people. I think there was a lot of thought that Joe Ryan might get traded this offseason, especially after Pablo Lopez went down with Tommy John surgery. He's going to be out for the year. That is a huge missing piece for a Twins rotation that had some interesting pieces in it with Lopez and Ryan, and then they've got some younger pitchers coming up that they're excited about. Ryan is obviously now their guy, and they're going to need him to really carry them if they want to have any chance of competing in the American League Central. The rest of it, it kind of depends on who clicks and who doesn't. Luke Keyshaw had a terrific rookie season when he was healthy. He's somebody to watch out for in the lineup. Royce Lewis, when he's healthy, someone to watch out for in the lineup. Of course, Byron Buxton. One of the best players in the game when healthy. He was healthy last year. He was healthy during the WBC. He's going to be in center field for them. He has been a Royals killer his entire career. He's one of the true five-tool talents in the game and a really fun player to watch. And that's really what the Twins are banking on, that he has a career year, that Joe Ryan helps carry them, that their young players step up. But this is definitely a Twins team that is very much in transition from where it was just a couple of years ago as a contender for the division.
If there's a third team to enter it, who do you think it is? Because right now it does feel like a two-horse race, just Royals and Tigers.
It's the Guardians. It's always the Guardians.
They do it. They don't look good on paper, and yet then they're competitive.
And then there they are. And
pitching.
You know what? Jose Ramirez and Guardians pitching. I don't know what kind of devil magic they have in Cleveland, but somehow there's a spell at Progressive Field, and they figure it out every year. And you know what? That's a testament to that organization. But, yeah, I see it more as a three-team race for the Central than a true two-team race.
So you give the Guardians.
Yes. Yeah, they won the division last year.
They did.
They won the division last year. They won the division the year before that. Until somebody usurps them, you have to give them the credit.
It's such a weird – that was – last year's division race was just a weird year.
Well, the run at the end was ridiculous.
Like at some point in July, Alex and I were like, we just want the Royals to try to be a playoff team. Forget about the division. It's too far. It's too many games. Nobody's catching up. Nobody's making up that distance. There's not enough baseball left, and one team still did.
Yep.
And, of course, the Royals were in a playoff spot until the very end. It's like we'll have JJ on here in a few minutes. I just want the team to take the step – like getting back to the playoffs and really being like – I don't even care if you're a game back of the division with 2 weeks to go. It's like taking that next franchise step to prove that you're a franchise like the Guardians. I just want to prove that year in and year out success so that it starts to feel like no matter who we have around, we can do some winning.
Well, I think part of it this year, and there was an edge in spring training. There was a focus that, not that that wasn't there last year, but it was a renewed focus this year of making the postseason. Yes, there was a winning season last year, second year in a row. That hasn't happened since 2013 to 2015. Let's not discount the fact that the Royals are playing winning baseball in back-to-back years and should play winning baseball again this season. But this was a team that went into last year expecting to make the playoffs at minimum again last year, and obviously the expectation was to win the division. Neither of those things happened. This team knows that it has the talent. It knows that it has the core of a pitching staff. It knows that it has a good bullpen. It knows that it has a very capable offense with superstar players that you need to get deep into October. Now they have to prove it, and they're aware that they have to prove it. And I think that they're going into this season, they have already started this season, knowing they have to prove that 2024 was not an aberration going from 106 losses to 86 wins the following year. Denny has said this for forever, right? You know, that team that surprises 1 year, oftentimes they take a step back the next year. But the year after that, look out. And guess what? It's the year after that. So, look out.
How many home run calls today? It's windy. I feel like, you ready? You ready for this? Who's I feel like you got a couple home run calls in you today.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we saw some in Atlanta, but look, I'm just ready to hear Denny on the broadcast again. I just want to hear gone, Salvador Perez. Like, that's all I want for today.
That would
be amazing.
We'll get that, hopefully, a little bit later on today.
What year is this for Denny?
This is year 58 for Hall of Famer Denny Matthews. It is the 58th season of Kansas City Royals baseball, and he has been here every step of the way. It is such a joy and an honor to share a broadcast booth with him and get to sit next to him. Frankly, I think we take his presence for granted way too much. There is no organization in baseball that has what we have in Denny Matthews, somebody that has seen every pitch of Royals baseball since the franchise's inception. And I hope that Denny is celebrated the way that he should be forever, but especially, you know, throughout the next handful of years. And I hope he goes forever because, you know, he will. He has been going forever. So year 58 for Hall of Famer Denny Matthews. So excited.
Yeah, that is so cool. And we're excited to hear both of you guys on the call a little bit later on today, man.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys. Happy opening day.
Happy opening day. Jake Eisenberg with us here on 96.5 The Fan. Up next, we're going to be joined by the general manager and the president of baseball ops, J.J. Piccolo. Certainly a lot to ask him about, not only for the season bigger picture, but even what occurred over the weekend in Atlanta. We'll get to that next as we continue broadcasting live outside Gate D at Kauffman.
Get a call up in my direction. Thankful for that, but it's such a blessing, yeah. Turn every situation into heaven, yeah. Oh, Italian breakfast to always slay. Got me dreaming of wins all day.
I can hear Cody and Gold. I don't know what happened with the bumper music there. I think we was going to play one of your songs.
Oh, I am playing it. You guys can hear it?
No, we can't hear it. We can't hear the song on our end. Yeah, so that's not potted down all the way on our end, but we'll interrupt your song as we are joined.
Which song was it?
I don't know.
It was Pasquantino.
Have you ever listened to any of the songs, JJ, that I've done on the show?
Probably for your better interest. He was actually JJ Piccolo, obviously, with us, the general manager and president of baseball ops. I do some silly songs for the team every once in a while.
Okay.
Pasquantino was when he was still in the minors, and I was asking for him to be called up.
I remember you hammering us about not bringing him up soon enough. Then we got him up, and he did well.
Yeah, he has. He's actually, and it's good to have you on. Thanks for a happy opening day.
Same to you.
Yeah, this is the nicest weather we've had since we've been doing the show for an opening day. And I mean, if you think about your time, when have we had an opening day this warm?
No, it's beautiful. I mean, I wish it was like this every day, you know, from day one to the end of the season. But, you know, being in the Midwest, we know where it's going the rest of the week, so it's going to dip down. But we'll enjoy this day while we can, and it's nice to have sun out and feel the sun on opening day.
We talked last week about weird opening up on a Friday night. It's on the road. It's in Atlanta and everything like that. This feels like opening day.
Absolutely. It was odd. I know you asked me about that last week, but you know, you're hanging out in a hotel till 3 o'clock, and it's like, come on, let's get this thing going. And it ended up being a really nice night. The weather was good, but it's just there's something about an opening day being in the daytime with the sun out the entire game that makes it baseball.
I want to ask you a couple of bigger picture questions about the team before we get some of the stuff that already took place over the weekend. Like, you as a general manager, you have to think about, like, the health of the organization is in. How do we know we're a good organization every year and we can maintain that? What are some of the things, I guess, you look for is signs that you guys are healthy everywhere, as in it's going to be long-lasting and sustainable what you guys are doing?
Yeah, well, I mean, right now the youth on our team and the controllability of guys that we have playing a lot, in the lineup a lot, in the rotation, some of the young pitching, you know, with Noah Cameron being here for another 6 years, and, you know, Ryan Burgert's in the minor leagues right now, but we've got him for a number of years, and Stephen Kolick. You know, we have some longevity, another 3 years with Cole counting this year, and then our lineup is fairly young and controllable. And then you look at your minor league system, you know, and our minor league system, I believe this year is going to make a significant jump industry-wide. I think most of our high-end talent, we have depth in our pitching at the upper levels, but our high-end talent's really at the high A and down level, which means they're 2 to 3 years away. And all you try to do is just line things up. You know, here's our team in 26, 27, 28. Who's going to be ready in 29, 30 so we can continue to have the success we want to have every year and compete for the Central Division every single year, you know, for as long as we can sustain it?
What do you make of the division? You know, we ask you this, I think, every opening day. You guys have your own internal projections on everybody else.
Yeah.
What do you look at in the AL Central this year and how close it might be with everybody?
No, it's very close. I think we're right there with probably Detroit. You know, I think we're probably the two best rosters, I would say. But you can't discount what Cleveland does every year. I mean, they just manage to eke out wins and win ball games and play good baseball. Chicago's getting better, and we're going to find out about Minnesota right now. But they still have some guys on that team, and we're facing Joe Ryan tomorrow. You know, when you're facing Buxton, he makes you a little nervous every time he comes to the plate. That's a team that's hard to tell where they're going to go. But the thing I like about our division more than anything, we all play baseball. Like, we all play the game the way it's – but there's an element of small ball. There's an element of all 26 pieces got to work together, and that's how we have to win in our division. None of us have the payroll to compete with, you know, the Dodgers or the Yankees. And, you know, so they got the star power, but we need to be a good baseball team, and that's what's neat about our division. We all approach it the same way.
What was the point of emphasis, I guess, for the team this offseason? Was it that base running, defense, some things that fell apart for you guys in an unusual year or an unusual way last year? Was it something
something else?
Yeah, no, that was, you know, our winning on the margins, you know, in our opinion, is the base running. And our base running just wasn't good. I mean, it was, you know, by our metrics, it was a difference of about 3 wins from 24 to 25. And it's difficult to explain how that all comes together in run value. But it was 3 wins that we felt like we left on the table because of poor base running. So that was a huge emphasis. And I think more than anything, we lost our fearlessness on the bases last year, which led to making mistakes, which led to tentativeness, not getting good jumps and not going when you should go. You know, that fearlessness you would see out of our clubs, we lost that, and now we got to regain that. And we turned the dial up a little bit. We went first or third really well this weekend. Yeah. I was really proud of the way they ran the bases. Got thrown out once on a caught stealing, but got a couple bags. And the big thing was when there was opportunities to steal, our guys took advantage of it, and that was a good sign.
I think what's always been good for this team is, like, on the opposite end, you guys are better than just about anybody because of Salvador Perez.
Yeah.
At preventing the other team from doing that. And so, like, it feels like that's maybe where you guys get the 3 wins. It could be a big swing for the team.
Absolutely.
If you're good at limiting the others.
Yeah, and we have and it's not just Salvi. Obviously, we had Freddie, now we have Carter. But it's also the pitching staff. They have a great awareness. Brian Sweeney and his team and pitching coaches, they do an awesome job in making control the running game. And that really starts with the pitchers and paying attention to the runners, being quick to the plate, changing your looks, all the things that throw a potential base stealer off their, you know, off their mark. They do an excellent job with that. And then you got Salvi, who can really throw, and Carter as well.
Salvi, the ABS right away. I mean, you guys aren't surprised, I'm sure, to see how well he knows the zone. But to see it in ABS, I know even across baseball, that was something everybody was talking about this weekend.
Yeah, he was excellent. And our feeling and our projections, our catchers are going to be the best, hitters are going to be the next best, and the pitchers are going to be the worst. So we're trying to limit, if not eliminate, the pitchers from making any challenges. But the catcher is the only one who's not moving. The hitter's moving to make a move at the ball, and his bat's moving. The pitcher's head is moving. The catcher's staying still. So he should have the best vantage point, and he did a great job this weekend.
We've got JJ Piccolo, Royals general manager, president of baseball ops, joining us here on 96.5 The Fan. We asked you, I think, 2 times at least during spring training and the WBC about Carlos and the velocity. We unfortunately saw it there on Saturday night and the struggles. Where are you guys at with him? And again, that unfortunately didn't catch you guys off guard, though.
Yeah.
I mean, you knew this was a possibility.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was a tough one. It was a tough loss. You want to get that first win somehow, some way, and it was right there for us. And you know, the weird thing is, the game yesterday ended on the same ball that was hit, that hit his foot, and we turned the unassisted double play. It hits his foot. We don't get the win. It doesn't take away from what we're all seeing. You know, our eyes are telling us right now his velocity's not there. But probably even more importantly and impactful is his command has not been good, and that's really what we're okay. The velocity, he's got a history of being slow with his velocity. We were kind of on the edge of our seats all of April last year when he came in, but once he got to the end of April, May, he really kind of took off. He led the major leagues in saves, so he's got to figure this out for us to be good and for our bullpen to be good. It's a matter of now trying to figure out how do we get him to that point where the velocity jumps and the command's good, and that's where our pitching coaches and our coaches, we got to put our heads together and figure out what's best for him, but what's also best for the team. And right now, you know, it's not best for the team to have him necessarily coming in those high leverage situations, but we know it's best for the team in the long run if we're going to be good in the bullpen.
Closer by committee until then? What's
the
plan?
Yeah, I mean, the obvious one is Urshay. You know, you know, I remember when we signed Carlos last year, it was a February sign. First call I made was to Urshay, hey, don't think that this eliminates you from being a closer in your career. Bullpens need depth, you know, and we don't know how this is going to work out. We certainly expected Carlos to be the closer, but Urshay's been a closer in waiting. And you can go back to the Yankees with John Wetland. John Wetland was the setup, Mariano Rivera was the setup guy for John Wetland. And then Mariano Rivera becomes, and there's a long history. Greg Holland, you know, he went through with Soria. And then
Herrera
Davis
was the setup guy, right?
I'm sorry?
Herrera was the setup guy.
Herrera, yeah. So that's usually how they matriculate to that closer role. It's just right now we have a lot of confidence to put Urshay in the ninth inning for a closer. The interesting thing is because we have Strom as well, it might be a little matchup just because if you got lefties, you know, if the righties in the middle of the lineup are in the eighth inning, you might see Urshay because the lefties are coming up in the ninth. You might see a little bit of that, and that's where Q, you know, has to make those decisions.
Fans asked a question about, like, obviously when you guys open the season against the Braves, Jack Caglione wasn't in the opening day lineup. He obviously has been in the lineup every day since. I guess the simple thing is was that about a Sorry, really when he was young. Whoa, okay there. All right, was that more about really tough lefty, or is he not going to be in against lefties?
That was simply it's Chris Sale.
Okay,
And that was, and honestly, like, we had a hard time deciding on Carter as well. You know, you got two young hitters facing arguably the best left-handed pitcher, you know, of the last 15 years. If you just look at his career numbers against lefties,
some of the best.
No lefties. I mean, you got some superstars that don't play against Chris Sale. You know, so, but you know, we wanted to get Carter with his plate discipline in there. He's gonna play against lefties. It's not going to be a platoon situation. It was just, you know, going back to like early March when we first started talking about this, I'm like, man, I wish we weren't playing the Braves or Sale wasn't pitching the opening day, because it's exciting to see your best young players in the lineup. But we got to try. We have an obligation to win games too, and that's ultimately why we decided that.
Did he look more comfortable to you in this first week? I feel
Absolutely.
Like he just looks like he's more relaxed.
He's looked more comfortable since day one. Before he went to the WBC, watching him in the WBC, you know, he's walking, and that's a great sign of a hitter maturing. And I don't know if his walk rates are going to be astronomically high. I think once he starts hitting a ton of homers, those walks will go up. But he took a lot of borderline pitches yesterday in the game, worked a walk in his first at-bat. That's a great sign of a young hitter becoming a more mature hitter.
I'm sure you guys have spent hundreds, if not thousands, of hours when you guys were making the decision as an organization to adjust the fences. What are you expecting, and are you as excited as kind of we are just to see how it plays? One thing to look at numbers, but let's see what it looks like.
Well, I'm anxious to get out there because I just got back. I haven't been here since they've finished the fences, so I'm going from here to do one other thing, and then I'm going right out to those fences. But I've seen pictures and videos along the way. I am really excited about it. I know our R&D department worked really hard to come up with the right dimensions, what will play the way we want it to play. You know, we've really tried to emphasize we're not looking to try to all of a sudden bolster our offense into some, you know, bandbox where it's got, you know, you're hitting pop-ups for homers. You know, we wanted to play fair, and I think the way we went about it, it's you know, accurate as we could possibly be, looking at all the weather metrics and, you know, batted ball data and run value on fly balls. And I think it's going to be exciting. And it's a little bit different look, too. You know, it's not your chain link from top to bottom. There's some padding around it.
It's not as, like, a circular either. Yeah, it's more angular.
We kept the symmetry until you get to the walls, probably about 15 feet from the foul pole. That wall there is the same. So the new wall intersects with the old wall. So that is a little bit different. You may see some ricochets in that corner that are a little bit different. But we don't like the ballparks when we go somewhere and you got to worry about the outfielders playing with some right angle and left center field like you see it in Houston. You know, that's a dangerous thing. We didn't want that. We wanted a clean look. And honestly, we want people to feel like they're decay, not some, you know, circus,
Let's put a mound out in the outfield like that for a while.
Exactly.
That was one of the weirdest baseball fields.
The fact that lasted as long as it did is amazing.
Never understood that.
That's crazy.
Never made no sense.
Yeah.
It's like a city park.
Yeah. My goodness. Well, we'll let you get inside. Good to see you here. Happy opening day, and we'll check in a few weeks.
Okay, guys. Thank
Absolutely.
You. Enjoy it.
Absolutely. JJ Piccolo, Royals General Manager, President of Baseball Ops, with us here outside Kauffman Stadium. We're here till 2 o'clock broadcasting from Gate D. Reminder, coming up in the next hour, we will have John Sherman speaking live out in the interview room, not only about this year, but I'm sure he will be asked about the stadium of the future and where things stand on that front.
Almost certainly.
Yes, definitely the case. Yes, so let's go back a little bit. You asked him about CAGs. When we were on the air Friday, the text line blew up immediately when the lineup came out, and the frustration. And I thought he hit on it a little bit. And this part maybe makes you, as a Royals fan, feel better, which is that was just, hey, unfortunately, Chris Sale,
it's
left-hander,
Chris Sale.
Happened to be the opening day pitcher. That's why on opening day you didn't have your superstar or future superstar, hopefully, in Jack Caglione, your top guy in your minors, now not even a prospect anymore, in the lineup. It wasn't because that's the plan against lefties. It was because it was Chris Sale. That hopefully eases people's concerns. And we'll find out later this week. When's the next lefty they face?
Twins are an all righty.
So not until the next series?
Rotation. So not until the next series at the earliest.
Yeah.
But also, he said he will be in against lefties. Chris Sale is historically one of the greatest lefties against lefties in baseball history. So he's right in a lot of ways and it's like, well, then why Carter Jensen? And he said they battle with that. Carter Jensen, in his short major league career, has proven he can hit, and in the minors, by the way, has better numbers against lefties. And they weren't trying to completely dismantle their lineup. And all of a sudden, it's just Nick Lofton and, all the backups essentially in for the opening game. He's like, we got to win games. And Jack Caglione against Chris Sale is not probably a very good recipe to win a baseball game. I didn't disagree with it then. I still don't disagree with it now. Just as long as what we talked about. He's an everyday player, as in against most lefties, he still plays. He still hits. One of the doubles he got over the weekend was against a left-handed pitcher. So, like, I want him hitting against those, just maybe not Chris Sale.
And then Carlos. We asked him about Carlos Estevez. We all know what happened on Saturday. Anybody paying attention knew that was a possibility. The only part that we didn't get a chance, I guess, to follow up on, I'm curious, do they think because of the ankle as well or the foot, are they going to play through this, or is an IL stint possibly there? We can maybe follow up with that later. Because the velocity was down. The performance wasn't good enough. They clearly cannot rely on him in a high-leverage spot right this second. But he mentioned the part that it's not just the velocity from a year ago, the command part. That's what's really concerning, Cody. It's not just, okay, is he going to ramp back up in 2 weeks and be hitting 94 on the gun again? Is it the command, the control of his fastball as well? Is that something that working with Brian Sweeney, they can get right? Because it's not just the velocity. He's just off all the way around.
No, he's
just why it was so as disastrous as it was.
Which is why, like, you know, a 15-day IL trip wouldn't be the worst news of all time. And then you call up Avila or you call up one of the other guys, Berger, who pitched really well during spring training. Maybe he's the guy who comes out of the bullpen for a little while. You have options available to you. Sounds like in the meantime, my committee is probably not. It's going to be Urseg. If it's a lefty, if they're getting ready to face 4, 5, 6 with two lefties, probably Strom. But in most other circumstances, it sounds like it will most likely be Urseg in the closing role. And until, I just think there's no way to go. Until he proves he's good again, he doesn't get to be the closer. So, like, you hope that that doesn't last all season, and I'd be stunned if it did. But until he looks like he's ready and good to go, you don't play that game. That's just not the way to operate. And so I think that that's more than fair. And, like, I get it. I get it for the same reason fans, like, JJ said the same thing. He's like, in March, when we started realizing we're probably not going to play Jack Caglione on opening day in the Royals lineup, that sucks. It's like, we get it. That sucks. He's like, but I'm trying to me, this was like, if this was game 87, nobody would say a word about it.
No, but
I want them to win game one as much as I want them to win game 87.
I do, but also, if he progresses as a player, at some point, whether it's this year or next year, you want to get to a point where it doesn't matter. He's in the lineup every single day. I don't care if he's playing the toughest lefty that season or not.
I don't care if
they're
it's
not
game
there yet,
seven
though.
Of the ALCS, or, you know, like, of the World Series. You want Jack, if Jack Caglione ends up being one of your better hitters, he'll be in. But, you know, like, Vinny's proven that, so he's in. And I get it. Like, the Carter Jensen angle is the only argument for, well, then it doesn't hold some water. Because you're still putting a player who's a rookie by at least Major League Baseball standards and has played only 25 games. I'm just saying, historically, his numbers against lefties in the minors and stuff are better than Jack Caglione. So they're probably, if it's a razor's edge and they decided against Jack Caglione against Sale, because it sounds like they battled with that too, and decided for Carter Jensen, that would be the reason why.
Let's talk about ABS for a second. By the way, coming up in 10 minutes or so, we'll talk a little bit about the Final Four. It is opening day, but we have to address what was one of the all-time shots in NCAA tournament history to get UConn to the Final Four, the Duke collapse. We'll get into that coming up in 10 minutes or so. But we asked JJ about ABS.
Oh, what a week.
I mean, there's nobody we've talked to so far, whether it's directly employed by the Royals or elsewhere, that doesn't really love already what we're seeing from it. And you heard JJ say when it comes to who's going to challenge, and it makes sense, I'm guessing most teams are this way, even if they don't have a Salvador Perez, catcher's who's going to do most of those challenges. But Salvador Perez, was it Friday night where he was 3 for 3?
Four for four
on the entire weekend. That could turn out to be a huge weapon. I don't want to, like, overblow it, but that's a big deal if you've got a catcher that has that knowledge of the game, that knowledge of the zone, to, I don't want to say steal strikes for your pitcher, basically.
But kind of.
Yeah.
Like, for all these years, we had to hear people complain about the metrics, not liking Salvador Perez's pitch framing. Well, the hell, he knows where the ball is.
Yeah.
So, like, if that has been a negative for a while, the fact that maybe he doesn't frame as well as some of the other guys, if he's getting stealing strikes essentially the other way, and he can just unlimited challenge correct balls and strike call, well, then great. I don't see why that's a problem in any way. It's great news. It also, this weekend, in my opinion, was a celebration for why ABS is going to be awesome. If you watched the C.B. Buckner look actively annoyed, Gold, as they went back to the review to overturn 2 strike 3 calls in a bases-loaded situation, and to have the crowd roar that he was wrong and to watch him get even more annoyed at the possibility of, you're like, yeah, good. You've been awful at this for years, and now everybody knows it. You're being embarrassed into doing your job correct. Oh, I don't feel bad for them at all. It was amazing theater.
They'll also
genuinely
get used to it. They'll also just get used.
Of course.
Like, at some point, they're not going to care when, hey, 93% of the game they were correct, Cody, but, you know, or whatever the average percentage.
They just
percentage.
Call for, like, one in the seventh inning.
But I really, today, it's going to be fun. And if you were on our road trip with us, you saw it in the minor leagues the last year or so. But for a lot of fans, understandably so, to see it for the first time, there will be, I'm assuming, at least one challenge today. See it for the first time, how quickly it goes up on the Jumbotron or the Crown Vision, and it's done in 5 seconds. If you're not paying attention, you won't even know until the announcement happens. It's so quick. But there is also a chance that it causes some extra tension, not between players, but also drama with fans. And, you know, I hope we get a chance to see Salvi in person use it today. I think it's just another element. I'm not saying you're going to the ballpark to see ABS. My point is, it's just another element that's new that people haven't likely experienced before.
Yeah, that's all. And, again, it's quick. But it can't. So, like, for the people who say, hey, did it take away the drama? Strike three, right? Like, the guy's walking off, bases loaded, gets out of the jam, the pitcher's excited. Does it take away the drama? I'd say it doubled it. You had the drama of the guy thought he got strike three with the bases loaded and got himself out of the jam. Then the, oh, we're back. No, you got to throw that pitch again. They did that twice.
I know. I don't want to, like, I don't want a game ending on an ABS challenge. That would be, that would suck.
I think people's deep fear is that someone's going to tap their head. It's going to be game seven of the World Series. And strike three is going to paint the outside.
So you might as well tap.
And you might as well tap your head, and it's going to feel like it takes the steam out.
Yeah, and I believe that could happen.
And, like, and yeah, in the maybe in the single biggest moment, it will make it feel slightly less cool. But there's plenty of other moments, man, when it's going to add the drama, the same as it does in tennis or some of these others.
Someone was texting in, and again, even though we're on remote today, outside Gate D at Kauffman Stadium, we do have the text line still up, 913-586-7965, and hope to see you guys here. If you're coming out to the game, please stop by, say hello. We've had a few people do that already. Someone said, did you see the tweet, Cody? They called you the ageist, Cody the ageist, about the umps and the age. The 10 oldest umps had their challenges overturned 69% of the time. The youngest 10 umps only 30% of the time.
Shocking. Shocking. It's not like everyone's eyesight gets worse. This is not like surprising stuff. Again, C.B. Buckner has been historically one of the worst ones in the league for a decade. And he's like all high and mighty about it. Oh, I'm the smartest. He's one of those umps. He holds it against you. He rubs your nose in it. He had to get embarrassed by 40,000 people cheering for him getting it wrong twice. And I'm convinced, by the way, that not that he was doing a bad job on the second one, but that he thought, screw you, that one's a strike too. And he had to own it a second time. That's what made it enjoyable. But even like the small ones, when Salvador Perez got one right, same at bat, got it right again in the third, three in one game, and he's just like, I know what I'm doing. It's all good, guys. I got it. That's a strike. That's a strike. That one's a strike too. It changes a lot in a game when a guy's down 1-2 versus up 2-1. You guys have all seen the numbers, right? When a hitter's up 2-0, 2-1, 3-1, when they're ahead in the count, they hit 100, 150 points better. It is a massive statistical advantage to get these little ones right.
It can be. And right now, we don't have the big enough sample size at the big league level. But it'll be interesting. We fast forward to June, July, and we get to the halfway point of the season later on around the deadline and right there. What teams are the best at it? That'll be something that, as we get more data with it, we'll be able to find out. Where the Royals rank in that, and the Royals will be able to adjust. Who do they trust to utilize that? Salvador Perez, of course, is the answer to that. But as the season goes on, we'll get a better feel. What teams are just really bad at it? What teams utilize it in the first inning? What teams don't? What teams end up not utilizing their challenges as much? All that data we don't have yet. It'll be kind of unique to this season. Eventually, we'll probably not think about it. Like, I doubt next year on opening day we're going to be talking about ABS, but it's new right now, and we're all trying to figure out what it means for the majors. We saw it in the minors. What does it mean for the majors? So we continue broadcasting live outside Gate D. Up next, we do want to briefly pivot to the Final Four. We have our matchup set for this Saturday in Indianapolis, but how we got there. UConn, a comeback, a shot for the ages. We're going to get into that next.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members. Stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 10 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 20 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 30 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store, download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
If you have a badass bank card, do you have a pink one or the black one? I've got to say, both colors look and feel like a badge of honor. It's one of those little things that actually reflects how you've moved through life. Confident, intentional, and not afraid to do things differently. And that's really what Badass Bank is about. It was created to deliver true customer service, and honestly, you feel that. It's not just talk. They show up, they support you, and they make managing money feel a lot more human. What I love most is who they're for. Badass Bank is for the everyday badass, the people pushing through hard things, showing up for their families, rewriting their stories. Built by industry disruptors and backed by decades of banking experience, they're here to challenge the status quo and give you real control over your financial future. Badass Bank is looking for customers who expect more. So the question is, are you badass material? Consider this your invitation. Find your inner badass and visit BADASS.bank.
Member FDIC.
At Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more messy. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to messy exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to Lowe's.com/moremessy. Now's the time to get in because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Did you know that there are over 200 legends like Andrew Jones, Albert Pujols, Felix Hernandez, and Ken Griffey Jr. in MLB The Show 26? Collect them all and current all-stars to build your perfect lineup. MLB The Show 26 is available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.